From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Here's a show about board games and card games and role-playing games for anyone who's ever bought a new boxed printed item from the store, lovingly opened it up, waited for the fart of the escaping air straight from the Chinese factory it was printed in, and just inhaled all those ink fumes lovingly, getting high off the smell of newly printed cardboard. That's what we love here at The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. Good evening.
Good evening, Trent. How are you going today? We have got an action-packed show for you. We're going to talk about games, and more games. We are going to pimp out our games. We are talking about what games we're looking forward to coming up this year. We are going to talk games.
For a change.
Yeah, just for a change.
And occasionally a little bit about music. About music and some of our beloved tunes. And it's becoming a bit of a tradition here to start with something that gets the blood going.
Oh, we're
going to
get heavy.
Just a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, Black Breath, Eat the Witch. Oh, thank God for that. I was a little bit backed up there. the last couple of days I haven't been eating too well, and that's fixed it. That's Black Breath, Eat the Witch.
My heart is pumping at about 160 beats per minute. I am pumped for a show and a half. Trent, what have you been playing?
On the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, we are getting medieval on your ass tonight. We are waiting for the new Game of Thrones season 4.
Winter is coming.
Eagerly anticipating the premiere in April. And in the meantime, if you can close your eyes and imagine a board game based on the Game of Thrones universe. Oh. What does that look like, Mark Rickards?
Everyone dies?
Yeah, pretty much. Certainly Trent does when he plays it. That's what I've been playing lately. The Game of Thrones board game, it's the map of Westeros divided up into all the territories. Six players we had for this. And look, it's essentially a glorified Risk. Fans of the game would protest at that, but it's an area control game where you're taking over Westeros and you're dressed up as one of the families.
Sort of a, like from what I've seen, sort of like a Risk cross with Diplomacy, where you've got the orders that you give, but then they can turn around and be slightly different than what
it looks
like.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I won't take you through all the rules because, look, we'd be here all night, frankly, and it is a very long game. Each round that you play has three phases. There's a Westeros phase with events that affect everybody, that prevent some actions, and that includes the wildlings coming down over the wall, which is a great mechanic, actually, because when the wildlings build up enough strength, everybody has to go in and fight them, okay? Yeah. But the player who commits the least amount of forces gets a penalty.
Oh, nice.
Which is a nice idea. So there's the Westeros phase, then there's the planning phase, where each player, they've got a bunch of order tokens that you play in secret face down on all your units that are on the board. It's things like invade the neighbouring territory, defend, move, you can negotiate with your neighbours, and then, and agree on a course of action, play the token face down, and then when you flip them all over, it's like, aha, no, I'm going to backstab you. And then there's the action phase where you play through all of those actions, and then you rinse and repeat, and essentially that's the game. I was playing the Baratheons, Stannis Baratheon. I left Dragonstone, the separate island off Westeros, in the very first turn and invaded King's Landing straight away.
Much like the TV show, almost.
And immediately regretted it because Dorne came up and took Dragonstone out from under me. And then the Tyrells began invading up from the south, and I basically sat in King's Landing for the entire course of the game going, don't hurt me, don't hurt me. And I lost badly, comprehensively outplayed in this.
You sure you weren't playing Joffrey?
I felt about as popular.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a lot of game. Frankly, it was a little bit beyond me. Certainly for a first night's casual game.
Look, I have...
Fans of the series are going to love it, though.
I have avoided it for that reason, because I know it's a whole lot of game.
You play the card game.
Yeah, look, I mean, the card game is great. I have seen this game a couple of times. I remember at BorderCon there was a special fan-made one where they actually played, I think, 8 or 9 players with 8 or 9 of the great houses, and it literally went all day.
Yeah.
I really want to play this game, but I have steered away because of the length.
One thing I will say, if you're a fan of the series, you'll probably love it, but it is missing... Well, you know what? It's missing marriage. Okay, because marriage and forced marriages,
yeah,
or arranged marriages, yes, at least, are such a big part of that series.
Mm.
That's an element that's not in this.
Yeah.
You're playing the living card game.
Yes.
And so I imagine that's got a little bit more of that kind of flavour, the political
negotiation. Well, in that game, when you attack, you can attack militarily, you can attack to take power, and you can attack with intrigue.
Mm.
So there does have that level of subterfusion, that level of undermining.
Yeah.
That perhaps is not just in the "I kill you, you kill me" sort of thing.
The most you can do in this with the characters who are actually in the game is commit them to lead an army, and they can affect the outcome of a battle in that way.
So it's quite military in its
But look, great game if you like that kind of thing.
I was going to say, and it's another beautiful Fantasy Flight presentation. They've just done it so well. This is the second version of it, and they've really made it nice. I've played a different tone of game.
Although we are still getting medieval.
Yeah, that's right. Now, it's called Red Dragon Inn. Imagine, if you will, a band of adventurers. They've been out killing dragons and orcs and goblins. And after that, what do? They retire to the nearest tavern, known as the Red Dragon Inn, for a drink, to talk about their exploits, to perhaps partake in some gambling. And, of course, shenanigans will happen.
And this idea is familiar to any role player, anyone who's played Dungeons & Dragons, because the Red Dragon Inn, it's a familiar trope in your fantasy role-playing games. It's the inn where all the adventurers happen to meet and say, hey, let's go raid a dungeon.
Exactly. So it's the end of an adventure. You're all back there. And one of the things I do enjoy about this game is you've got a track. One counter starts at 0, that's your alcohol content. Another counter starts at 20, and it's your fortitude. If ever the two should meet, you pass out and you're out of the game. So basically it's a game of drinking, of buying drinks for other characters, of gambling in between rounds of drinking contests, where you are trying to steal money and to get the other person to pass out. And of course it has the chainmail bikini barbarian, the halfling sneak, the wizard with a rabbit familiar, Dimly the dwarf. It has a whole bunch of characters. I've actually got the Red Dragon Inn, which has 4 characters, and the Red Dragon Inn 2, which has another 4 characters. Believe it or not, there's actually Red Dragon Inn 3, which has another 4 characters, and Red Dragon Inn 4, which adds another 4 characters, as well as a separate game called Gambling I'm In, which in the other games is a sub-game. That's a whole another game in itself of just the gambling that you can play within the game of Red Dragon Inn, or separately. They sort of stretch this to the limit and well beyond. There are mounted sharks waiting for you to jump them, I think. What can I say about this game?
Well, can I say that I played this with you last week, and then noted that you sold it at the Great Nerd Bird.
That was what I was going to say is, you know, look, I have had it for a few years. I haven't got it to the table a lot. I wanted to get it to the table again. I did get it to the table last Wednesday night after the show, and then I made the decision to sell it.
Yeah.
So, look, it's great to give it a try. It is one of those typical backstabby type games. We've played other games like a game we're going to talk about shortly called Cutthroat Caverns, which do the same thing but better. And that was why I made the decision to let it go. I hope the person who bought it really enjoys it.
I did think player elimination was a problem in this, because once you're drunk and you pass out in the game, you're essentially out of the game completely. And then the rest of it just seemed to drag on for quite some time when it got down to the last 2 or 3.
Yeah, except, you know, it was the usual problem. No one wanted to pick on the pretty girl.
So that was Red Dragon Inn. Cutthroat Caverns is a game we have been playing a lot of. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. And up next, and Mark's going to freak out when I tell him this because we haven't discussed this.
What?
I actually wanted to talk about some of the upcoming events we've got for the Hobart Game Society, including this weekend and for Tabletop Game Day. That's coming up next.
This was not in the schedule.
At the Dice Men Cometh on Edge
Where's
Radio.
Where's the memo?
99.3 FM. The Ocean Party and Split on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark here for the Dice Man Cometh for another Wednesday evening. Wanted to talk a little bit about the Hobart Game Society, which is the club that we are a part of. This is the club that embraces all things that are nerdy and made of cardboard and or wood and little plastic molded pieces. If you're interested in coming along and checking out some of these board games and card games that we like to talk about, well, we have meetings every weekend, and we've got one happening this weekend.
This weekend.
In Kingston.
At Kingston on Saturday night in the Y Space, which is off Channel Highway, just next to Rain and Horn. It's a free event if you're a youth in Kingston.
Correct.
And obviously membership of...
What's youth? What's the cutoff? Can you be youthful in mind? No, you can't.
Yeah, I am. Look, anyway, I think, hey, we'll take a good look at you and we'll judge whether we think you're youthful or not.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, come on down.
Normally we ask for $5 just to cover the cost of the venues that we hire, but if it's your first night coming along to a Hogs event, we waive that because, you know, you're just curious, come along.
Well, the other thing is membership for a whole year is only $36 for 12 months. That's for a full fee-paying person. We do also have...
Student prices
and family prices.
That's right.
And, you know, that is such good value because we basically have almost every week of the year we have an event. In fact, I think the only week we missed last year was Christmas. So we basically had about 50 events over the year for the cost of $30 all up.
And we run a couple of big events, including one coming up next month for April 5th. The Tabletop Gaming Day, sorry, International Tabletop Gaming Day, as decreed by Will Wheaton from the Tabletop YouTube show from Geek and Sundry. April 5, 12 hours of board gaming at the Lena Valley Community Hall in Creek Road in Lena Valley.
We're only asking for a gold coin donation for that, that day.
Yep. So that's noon till midnight on that day, and it's, look, completely casual. Rock up with a board game, rock up with some friends, and just see what happens.
Yeah, come for an hour, come for 12 hours. Bring your own game, play ours. You know, for all those people who've said, oh, I've been thinking about buying this game, but I don't know whether I should, it's the perfect opportunity to come and try it because chances are the game you want to buy, someone is going to have.
I think a bunch of us are going to head down to the Yum Cha place down the road.
To the castle.
After that as well. Look, if you're not familiar with, there's this hilarious old medieval themed theatre restaurant down the road that just like flopped. The business, you know, died completely. And it's now completely incongruously a Yum Cha restaurant because that makes complete sense when there are full suits of armour sitting in the corner. Okay, so that's International Tabletop Game Day on April 5.
And just to mention also our friendly local game store, Area 52, also running an event on Tabletop Day, so check that out as well.
Yep, and we'll be going there to
play games as well.
Also, later in the year...
This is big news.
Okay, so for the past 3 years, we have run what we call the Hobart Winter Games Fest. Mm. So in the middle of winter, when there's barely 2 hours of daylight in Hobart each day, we all get together on one Saturday, maybe 2 days, and just play board games all day. We are doing that again this year. The dates, set them aside.
Absolutely. We have August the 9th, Saturday, and August the 10th, Sunday. It is running for 2 whole days of gaming craziness. There will be a bar. Let us not hold back.
We can say this is going to be at the Best Western Hotel, which was the same location as the Great Nerd Purge last weekend.
Yeah, we checked it out. It's a good location.
Great venue. We can also say, well, let me just say this. It's going to be part of something larger this year, all right? So the Hobart Winter Games Fest number 4 will be running as part of a larger event. Mm. If you're a gamer, you won't be disappointed. I just want you to just, you know, put that date in your calendar, and if you're interstate outside of Tassie, maybe start looking at some flights okay? More details will be coming to hand, and also more details are available on the Hogs website, www.hogs.org.au.
Absolutely. There's a special page there just for the 4th Annual Winter Games Fest. You will not want to miss it. We did have some interstate visitors last year, and I tell you what, they had a hell of a time.
Okay, enough blatant self-promotion. Let's talk games. We're going to talk about some of the games we're looking forward to in 2014 and also, in particular, something we've been playing quite a bit of, Cutthroat Caverns, next at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Twin Shadow, you can call on me. If you're after the Dice Man, of course. Trent and Mark on Inch Radio 99.3.
Otherwise, don't bother.
FM. Exactly. Exactly. If you want big, fat, messy, smelly nerds coming around messing up your house, call us.
Absolutely. And we all know that there are men with beards and then there are women.
Exactly.
As someone pointed out to me this week. Trent, we are going to talk about a game we've been enjoying. It's become our, would you say, our go-to game for six people as a relatively short but mildly fun activity?
Oh, it's not mildly fun. It's buckets of fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
And, look, this has rapidly become one of my favourites to sort of whip out at the moment.
Right, okay. This is the game Cutthroat Caverns, designed in 2007 by a guy called Kurt Covert. May or may not be his real name. And the company is Smirk and Dagger Games.
Have they done anything else, or is this...
They've done Cutthroat Caverns. They've done five or six expansions to Cutthroat Caverns.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
have done some other games.
Okay.
But Cutthroat Caverns, Tombs and Tomes, Cutthroat Caverns, Relics and Ruins, Cutthroat Caverns, Deeper and Darker, Cutthroat Caverns, Fresh Meat.
And I suppose, to sum it up, it's... Look, it's a lot like a game called Munchkin, which you might be familiar with.
Except fun,
yeah. which kind of distills the dungeon crawl D&D experience down to simply fighting monsters.
Yeah, although the thing I like about it is the semi-cooperative element. Because you're basically fighting together to kill monsters.
Yep, you flip over a card, there's the monster with certain characteristics. Everyone joins in to fight them, but it's only the person who lands the killing blow who gets the points.
Yeah, so it's basically a game of kill stealing, which of course a lot of online players will know. And so, you know, you're playing cards for damage points. I damage it for 50. I damage it for 20. I poke it with a stick and I don't do any damage. Oh, you thought I was going to kill it almost so you could finish it off. No, you're going to have to wait till next turn. And then the interesting thing is the initiative mechanism. If you've got six players, there's six cards. You deal them out at the start of the round, or at least we do, because I think we may not be playing it just as the rules explain, but our version seems to work better.
Well, yeah, look, that's one thing I do want to talk about with this. So there's a shifting initiative mechanism that happens throughout the game.
Roll for initiative, monkey boy!
Except this is just drawing cards. Mm. It plays really fast,
and
it is a lot of fun, very simple to pick up. One thing I really will say in this game's favour, the monsters that are in, and we've only got the basic edition of this game.
Yeah, I have one expansion.
Right.
The one we played last week, Garth's game, I don't think he's got any expansions.
The creatures that are in there that you have to fight are really innovative.
Yeah,
and some
lots of variety.
Some of the tricks they pull out in terms of exactly who it is they damage at the end of each round and the way they do it and how much they do it, very, very tricky. And, of course, I'm saying this and I can't think of any examples off the top of my head right now.
One of the interesting ones last week was the... when we fell into the maze, and all of a sudden it's not a monster, it's a maze, and basically you're playing a game of memory, and if you don't get out, you get damaged a long way. There are monsters that if you don't overkill them, they come back again. You get monsters that you throwing cards to determine how tough the monster is,
yes.
But if you make it really weak, then you take even more damage.
Yeah, the person who throws in the smallest damage card to add up to that total ends up copping it worst of all.
Yeah, so huge variety of monsters. There is another expansion, which I don't think we have, which adds... So the version we've been playing, the characters are fairly generic. I mean, you've got your standard tropes, your dwarf, your elven ranger, your barbarian. But there is another expansion that gives each of the individual characters extra powers, so it makes them a little bit more varied. But look, it's a lot of fun. It doesn't drag on like that other game we mentioned with backstabbing, but it has that backstabbing element where, you thought you were going to do that. No, I'm going to play a card on you. Well, I'm going to play another card that trumps your card. No, I'm going to play a card that cancels your card, that cancels my card. It just adds that fun. But it plays quickly.
So if you've played Munchkin, which is a very, very popular franchise, and look, a fine game in and of itself for what it is. It's become this enormous cash cow for Steve Jackson Games, and look, that's a whole other thing I want to talk about at some other point on the show. But Cutthroat Caverns is the logical next step,
absolutely.
I would say. But having said that, there are two criticisms I want to level out.
Oh.
One, the rules aren't clear.
No, it's not well written.
We've had to house rule a couple of things. We're not entirely sure at exactly what point during the round you're supposed to draw for initiative, because it seems to make sense the way we've house ruled it, and yet there are many cards that refer to doing it at a different
time. Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure about that one.
And I'm not going to go into, elaborate that, but it's not clear, the rules are not well written, and any game designer knows you're going to live or die by how well your rules are written. It's just frustrating otherwise, and also how small your font is. The other thing I want to level at it is the art. The art and the presentation of the game is real. It's fairly stereotypical fantasy, chainmail, bikinis, bloodthirsty monsters type art, and it doesn't really tell you just exactly how much fun this actually is, because the fun of the game is that you end up cursing at each other and screaming because you're trying to backstab each other, and there's a lot of laughter and name calling in that, and the art just doesn't lend itself to that. It's kind of stuck in this post-Tolkien bloodthirsty
fantasy. It's very 70s,
isn't it? Yeah, it really is. But it just got me thinking that it's a very difficult thing to get right, because if you're doing a fantasy-themed game, you're either going to go for something really cartoony.
Yeah, like the Munchkin cartoony. I was going to say John Malkovich, not John Malkovich. Whoever the artist is that does those, does the Dork Tower. He's got a very recognisable style. He also did the art for Apples to Apples.
And you can do that a little bit better, like something like Small World, say, or you can go the really serious Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, serious artwork. I don't think either of those approaches quite work. And just as an aside, for a bit of good artwork, the sort of thing I'd like to see a little bit more of. It's a little bit more abstract looking, still cartoony, but more simplified. There's a Kickstarter for Catacombs.
Oh yes, a new version of Catacombs,
which is dexterity game where you're actually fighting your way through a dungeon by flicking wooden discs across a map. Whether or not you like that sort of thing, I don't know. But the artwork for this does look great, and it's a fresh take on the monsters and that kind of fantasy tropes. Mm. Yeah,
nice. Mm.
But Cutthroat Caverns, nonetheless, a good game.
Yeah, look, I've been enjoying it, as you said, particularly because it plays to six and it doesn't take long. It is one of those larger group games you can roll out. You know, takes an hour, 90 minutes, a lot of fun.
We recommend it. We recommend it. Two thumbs up from the Dice Men Cometh. More games, just for a change.
Yeah.
In fact, games that aren't even in our hot little hands yet.
Or the ones we can't wait to get hold of.
The ones that we know are coming out later this year that we might have to wait up to a year or 2 years to actually see here in Australia.
We are quivering in anticipation.
We don't like to just talk about, you know, the news here on the show, because you can get your board game news from a bunch of sources online, and they're going to be, frankly, better than what we could do.
Yep.
But a couple of things have whetted our appetite. We'll talk about them next on the show.
Oh, the beautiful sounds of Phoebe Starr, Alone With You. You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm Mark. I'm here with Trent. We're going to talk about more games, but I tell you what, there are a lot of games we're looking forward to coming out this year later on. Trent, what are you really looking forward to?
Can I just preface this by saying that one of the interesting / frustrating things about this hobby, it being so analog in a digital age, that you often wait a couple of years after you hear about a title to actually get your hands on it and play it. Point in case being Suburbia.
Yeah, I was going to say, or Terra Mystica, which you know was the hit of Essen 2012, when I just played 2 weeks ago.
So the first game that I'm looking forward to getting my hands on this year, maybe if it happens, is one that was originally announced in 2010.
Oh, really?
Wokstar.
Oh, yeah.
Wokstar, a cooperative game played in real time with a timer, where you're all running a Chinese restaurant together, trying to feed the customers as quick as you possibly can. It came out in 2010, and it was a huge hit. It sold out of its initial print run of only a very small amount.
Yeah, that's right. It was just a small print run.
And there's a new version of it that got kickstarted in February of this year that features an electronic timer and enhanced components. There's already delays in delivering on that Kickstarter, apparently, that have got the nerdverse up in arms. People get very, very intolerant about this stuff. Give them time. You'd rather have a game that works than have some piece of crap that's just arrived, you know, at the original scheduled time, okay? You'll get your money's worth. Wokstar, I'm going to be looking for that in stores later this year.
Look, one that I think there's maybe one iteration out of already, but it's going to be exciting. Marvel Dice Masters.
Oh, right.
So you know the game of Quarriors, where it's called a dice-building game, like a deck-building game, where you're adding dice to your pool of dice that you draw for a bag to pull out and fight monsters. This is the Marvel version of that. But it's not just like Quarriors where they have expansions every now and again. This one is going to have booster packs, like in your trading card model. Each booster pack, I'm heard, in terms of US prices, is only going to be about less than $2, $1.99 or something.
And look, this is coming out just in time for the new Guardians of the Galaxy Marvel film and the Avengers 2.
Winter Soldier, Captain America. So in these boosters, apparently, it's going to have like one dice and two cards. So you're going to get your base set. I think the first base set is Avengers versus X-Men, which ties in nicely with, I think they've had a comic of that name out for a while or a trade.
New X-Men film on the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're throwing your dice. You're using your dice to buy other dice, and then you're using those dice, so you're buying more and more powerful dice, to fight the monsters, the villains, each other.
And they're customised dice.
Exactly.
In the colours of the...
Each individual character has their own dice, and there's actually three versions of each character. So there's sort of like the vanilla one, the good one, and then the ultra rare one.
Right.
With extra powers.
Other thing about this, I hear there is a DC version of this game coming out as well, so you'll be able to play DC.
Batman versus Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. All right.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to giving that a try, Marvel Dice Masters.
I'm smelling a big money sink there. Look, one game that we are playing at the moment is Descent, the dungeon crawling game from Fantasy Flight Games. They've got a whole bunch of new expansions that are already out and more on the way. Manor of Ravens and Shadows of Nerikal. Maybe that one's out already. Look, can't wait to get my hands on those and play them. Can't wait to just finish playing through the base game when we actually find time. And look, just talking of Fantasy Flight Games, I was just having a look through their upcoming printing schedule online, and I was very pleased to see that Twilight Imperium 3...
Fourth edition?
No, 3...
Yes.
...is getting reprinted in May, which means... No fourth edition just yet, which means I don't have to spend $150 on that this year.
Well, the other thing is they've just released another, or it's just about to be released, another living card game.
Really?
This time in the Warhammer 40K universe. So space orcs fighting space marines, which we know very much is going to fit a very particular audience.
Yeah.
But hey, the living card model, living card game model, we know it works really well.
And we know it's a huge cash cow.
Yeah,
for that
absolutely.
Company.
So look, that's going to come. One I'm looking forward to, I guess, I don't want to pigeonhole, but I guess you could call it a sort of a drinking game, Baron Munchausen. So sort of a cross between a role-playing game and a drinking game.
You've mentioned this before.
Yeah, and look, there's a new version coming out, and I've been holding out for the new edition because it just sounds fantastically funny. Baron Munchausen, of course, famous for telling tall stories. The whole premise of this game is who can tell the tallest story, but there are actually ways to interrupt the person telling the tall story and make them come up with additional information to elaborate on a particular aspect of the tall story to make it a bit trickier. It sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds right up my alley. Baron, I can never pronounce it, whether it's Munchausen or Munchausen.
Munchausen.
I'm waiting for that to come out. I really am.
I'm looking forward to the expansion as well, Baron Munchausen by proxy. Another game that has been mentioned on this show previously, and I'm going to talk it up again, is Dead of Winter.
Oh, I had that on my list.
A Crossroads game. Now, this...
It's open for pre-orders now.
Yeah. So this is through Plaid Hat Games. This looks like a really first-class production. Plaid Hat Games made Mice and Mystics, spared no expense in... And look, that does translate to an inflated cost retail-wise, but you get what you pay for. This is a semi-cooperative story game with a lot of psychology to it. There's common victory conditions that all players can work towards. There are individual victories too. Maybe just one or two players might score some victories. Multiple scenarios. Each player gets two characters each, and there's a goal every round that you need to work towards. boards. Otherwise, something bad is going to happen. There's a morale tracker for the group through that has negative consequences on everybody. So if not everyone is chipping in to meet that goal, everyone suffers. There's voting elements. There are hidden goals. There are dice in this as well, and this morale tracker. I think this sounds fantastic. The only problem I've got is that it's a zombie-themed game. But we are promised that Crossroads is a...
The system?
Yes, it's a system that will be applied to other scenarios. I'm imagining if they get this right in the first one, it can only get better in the next one.
Yeah, okay. Look, fantastic. It does sound exciting. I did have it on my list. Two quick ones. One I just saw this week, a game called Abyss, the latest game by Bruno Cathala. Yeah. He of Cyclades, Shadows Over Camelot, Dice Town, Mr. Jack. Looks absolutely beautiful. Looks like Underwater Empires Atlantis type thing.
Yeah, this has made everybody very excited in the past couple of days, and frankly this is one of the reasons why I don't like talking about the news, because everybody gets all excited about the new release and everything. And yes, the artwork is gorgeous, but we know nothing about this.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it does look great. The other one I'm excited about, this is not a new game, but I'm excited about playing it again, Virgin Queen, The Wars of Religions.
No.
I am going to play that again at BorderCon. I'm going to set up someone to teach me again, and I know there are other people interested. It's a fantastic game.
The War of the Reformation.
No, it's the one. And we played Here I Stand, which is the Wars of the Reformation. The Virgin Queen is the sequel. So the one we had was where one of the player who played England was King Henry VIII, who was basically trying to have an heir.
Okay.
This is the sequel, which is playing as Queen Elizabeth I, who's exploring the New World, who's fighting against the Spanish, fighting against the French, fighting against the Pope. It's the next iteration. It's like a six-player Twilight struggle. It is fantastic. It's a bit of a mammoth game, but I'm going to play it at BorderCon. I'm going to rope you in, Trent.
I'm just going to move on and pretend I know all about English history and what you were talking about. Seafall by Rob DeVoe.
Davio.
One of the biggest games of the past couple of years in terms of innovation was a little thing called Risk Legacy. Standard Risk, however, as you play the game itself actually changes, all right? So you're tearing up cards, you're writing on the board, you're naming towns after yourself. Seafall promises all of that longevity and that flavour of you know, the game changing over time, but in a brand new system, unshackled by Risk. It is a 4X game.
Yeah, that is an exciting one.
Exploration, exploitation, whatever the other X's are. There's some kind of year tracker.
Extermination.
Strange, progressively revealing geography as you explore the board. Really looking forward to that. And look, there's a bunch more, like the X-Files game that just got announced as well.
Look, there's so many more. There's so many more. Just back on the music news quickly, because I'm not going to do a stupid segue. This weekend, I'm excited. I'm seeing Kate Miller-Heidke here in Hobart at St. David's Cathedral, part of her Heavenly Sounds tour. Oh, yes, that was Kate Miller-Heidke sharing her air with Passenger on that duet. It's a beautiful song. I'm going to see her this weekend.
That's lovely.
I can think of people I'd like to share my air with, Trent. Oh, you're one of them, of course.
No, what a beautiful song.
We have, surprise, surprise, run out of time again. Well, we had so much more we're going to talk about.
You're talking too much.
Me,
and
Trent,
you're playing your
Trent,
bloody
songs. Shut up. We know it's you, mate. We know it's you, okay? You are Captain Long-Winded, all right? So
we were going to talk about pimping your board games. We'll do that next week. In the meantime, if you're in Hobart, come along to the Kingston Y Space this Saturday night.
From 7 p.m.
From 7 p.m. We'll be there until about midnight as well if you want to rock up a little bit later. If it's your first time at a Hogs event, it's free!
Yeah! Come along, give it a try. Look, there'll be heaps of games there. There'll be friendly people there. We'd love to have you along. Remember our Tabletop Day, April 5th. Remember our Winter Games Fest, August 9th and 10th.
And remember, we love you.
And we love you too. We're going to be back next week. We are on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh, and we are out of here.
Does that mean we goeth?
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.